welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined, as always, in studio by my good friends and partners in radio, Barnabas Piper, and international man of leisure, Ronald J. Martin, whose trip is winding down, but we're not going to dwell on that, Pipe. We don't have time to dwell on it because we got business. We have work business to discuss, and that we have some new sponsors. So, Piper, do what you do. Be the Michael Jordan of the promo read. And lay some of these sponsors on us because we've got interesting topics to get to today. This is the middle-aged men with big egos episode of the Happy Rant Podcast.
To be clear, not describing us.
Well, no, not necessarily
other middle-aged men with big egos.
At some level, that probably could describe all three of us, though, because I think we all are somewhere on that spectrum. But lest we get ahead of ourselves, Piper, what do we have business-wise?
Well, to start, if I am the Michael Jordan of promos, today is the Michael Jordan after playing 48 holes of golf in the Florida sun and then spending all night at a casino. So if I'm a little off on my promos, I'm that version of Michael Jordan.
You don't need to qualify. You never need to qualify.
Wait. Pipe, how close to reality is that? Have you really done like Jordan-y things in terms of all-night gambling and golf? Because I want that to be true.
Oh, here's the thing. If I had done that, I would be so much better right now. No, it's more a matter of, like, church responsibilities and children, which
I got you.
Far more draining than anything Michael Jordan ever did in his party lifestyle. So, all right, our first sponsor is Waterbrook Multnomah, and the book is The Rise of the Servant Kings, What the Bible Says About Being a Man. And lest you think this is a book that fits the middle-aged egotistical version of manhood or toxic manhood, as the vernacular is these days, the whole premise of it is looking at how the importance of humility, surrender to God, and servanthood as what true manhood is. So Ken Harrison is the author. He was heavily involved in Promise Keepers back in the day, which I think still exists in some way, shape, or form, but it's not a stadium.
Dude, I hope it does. It's kind of like a nostalgic thing. I hope it exists.
And, you know, as much as it was sort of a goofy thing to rag on, it did a lot of good for a lot of people. Like, Promise Keepers was one of those things that it didn't promote a brand of manhood that caused problems, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree.
Unlike some of the people we will discuss shortly. So Harrison was heavily involved in that. He was the chairman of it, which sounds like a position of a lot of authority. He's also a former Los Angeles police officer, and he is now a CEO of Waterstone, which is basically a large humanitarian fund for Christian organizations. So he's been involved in a lot of different things. So the book is The Rise of the Servant Kings. It's a look at humility, surrender as the heart of manhood. And the range of endorsements on this, oh, you'll love this, Ted. Evander Holyfield endorsed this book.
Evander Holyfield, my old friend. I've been in his house.
Followed immediately by Oz Guinness. So
yeah, I was gonna run down the roster of endorsers. This is an all-star lineup. Who's your favorite endorser there? Mine is Holyfield. I'm calling Holyfield.
I mean, Holyfield was my favorite.
Just because
he's the coolest.
Yeah.
Let me see. The fact that he and Oz Guinness are right next to each other makes me very happy. Oz Guinness, you know, he's a British guy, writes a lot very thoughtfully about culture. And he's super even keel. If you've ever heard him speak, you know, very precise. And then you got Holyfield, who made a living battering people into the ground.
Yeah. Dude, can I parse Holyfield's endorsement for just one second?
Please.
Because as I read this, Piper, there's a 0% chance that he wrote any of this. Can I just go through this?
Please, break it down.
All right. This is Evander Holyfield on Rise of the Servant Kings. In Rise of the Servant Kings, Ken Harrison explains clearly what the core qualities of a man of God should be. And, you know, that sentence is okay. I don't see Evander using the term core qualities, but I'm just going to move forward. Since Ken is an ex-police officer, he is not afraid to get right to the nitty-gritty in describing how a man can apply the Bible's principles. Okay, so there is a 0% chance that Evander Holyfield would ever say nitty gritty. That's a middle-aged lady thing to say, not a like.
Well, that sounds like somebody my mom's age trying to describe what she thinks a middle-aged black man might say.
Exactly. That's like this drifted across somebody's desk. Somebody in Evander Holyfield's empire was like, write him an endorsement for this book. And
also,
this is what happened.
All this person knew about Evander Holyfield was what Google Images told them. They're like, I think he was – maybe he was in that Creed movie or something. Looks like he might have pretended to be a boxer at one point.
Now, this is the interesting part to me, Piper. From personal integrity to marriage to fatherhood to serving his fellow man, if you want a no-nonsense guide to getting manhood right, this is it. Now – I just want to beg the question. I'm just throwing this out into the universe. Has Evander Holyfield gotten those things right?
I don't feel like I'm in a position to judge.
That's the thing. I really don't fully either, but I'm just begging the question. I don't know. It seems odd to me, but there it is. Evander Holyfield on the Rise of the Servant Kings. Go buy the book. What more do you need to know?
All right. Well, I'm going to we'll bookend this with the first line of Oz Guinness's endorsement, which is some authors write with ink and some with water. Harrison writes with blood and fire.
How do you write with any of those things? All of us on this program have written
books. Ink and blood, I can imagine. The water and fire part, I mean, unless we're talking, you know, bathed in the Holy Spirit, maybe that's what he's getting at. So anyway,
it's actually the only one I can really get my head around. I don't, you know, people talk about bleeding on the page, but I've never actually done it, and I assume you boys haven't either. So
no, that sounds a little bit like vampire movie-ish.
This is strange from Oz Guinness. I don't know where Oz is going with this.
Well, we're going to have this book as a sponsor for the next couple episodes, so we can suss out this one. We can suss out John Stone Streets, and we have a Lieutenant General William Boykin of the Army. We can get into these. So anyway, Rise of the Servant Kings is the book from Waterbrook Balnoma. Check that out. Our other sponsor is Nav Press and Tyndale Publishers. The book is Down to Earth. We've talked about this the last couple episodes. It is a book exploring how Jesus used parables to connect people to the gospel in very real life ways. So using real life examples, and so looking at prayer life and faith in God and humility and just all the different things the parables touches on. The author is Tom Hughes. He's a longtime pastor. Sorry, Tom, but your list of endorsers, while they wrote nice things about your book, there's no Evander Holyfield's on here. So
did he get Mike Tyson for his?
Mike Tyson, big fan of the parables.
Huge fan of it.
I don't know who any of these people
are.
Except for
who's
Albert
the most
Tate.
Famous person he has?
Glenn Burris Jr., president of the Foursquare Church, or Albert Tate, who is an author and speaker who I'm familiar with through sort of just circles of people, but I don't. President of Fuller Theological Seminary, Mark Labberton. That seems meaningful. And then, that's about it. But the book is Down to Earth, How Jesus Stories Can Change Your Everyday Life, an exploration, kind of a devotional, reflective look at the parables. Go check that out from Nav Press. It is available now.
Well, there you have it, Piper. That's a lot of business. And this podcast is nothing.
Ronnie is now searching for cabins in protest of all of this talk.
Ronnie's doing his own business.
I'm looking for e-bikes right now, boys. E-bikes.
What is an e-bike?
It's an electronic bike, an electric bike.
There you go. You get all the benefit of being outside with none of the exercise. That's good, baby.
So it's like a moped with a tiny motor or something?
No, yeah. It's like it has a motor and it like enhances the pedaling. So it gives you a boost when you're going up the hill.
Judas H. Priest, listen to me.
How old does one have to be to need something like this?
I mean, at least as old as like middle-aged guys needing endorsements. I mean, at least that old.
Baby, I want you to get a vintage 1980s moped. And I'm going to be upset if you get this e-bike. You got to
lean into
the moped.
These are just modern mopeds. This is all it is. It's just a modern moped. That's
it. Dude, I know, but the old mopeds were so dope, man.
They were so horrible, clunky.
Dude, they were. They were horrible and clunky, but like all the cool like dirtbag kids in your town had one like back in the
80s. You say, baby, you want me to be vintage instead of like new and modern and all Pirates of the Caribbean? Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I want. That's exactly what I want for you, baby.
All right.
How relaxed are you right now? Are you so relaxed? Relaxed?
I can barely speak. I can barely get words out of my mouth. It's effort and work to get the words up and out.
I know, baby.
There's a fine line between relaxation and boredom, it seems.
That's true. Yeah. Well, lest Ronald get bored, Pipe, let's lean into these topics. And we've got three men to talk about. All three of them, I think, it's no stretch to say that they have big egos. I want to talk about Gary Vaynerchuk. Gary Vaynerchuk is a business guy who's known for being brash and abrasive. and swearing a lot and building his persona online. Pipe, you and I are familiar with Gary V, as he's known in the industry, because we are friends with guys who fancy themselves entrepreneurs. And these entrepreneurial type guys in your church, they're almost all of them fanboying over Gary Vaynerchuk. Apparently, Ron doesn't have young entrepreneurial guys in his church. I feel like Ron is a young entrepreneurial guy.
To be fair, Ron wouldn't know because he hasn't been at his church in like 3 months. So
that's true. He doesn't know who's at his church anymore.
They mean they might have attracted a whole bunch of them over the course of the spring.
He may have. This is an outrage.
What's an outrage? Which part?
To say that I haven't been at my church for 3 months.
How is it an outrage in that you haven't?
Because it's only been a month. It's only been a month, guys. 30 days. Come on. 30 days out of 365 days.
Just your average run-of-the-mill, you know.
Just a vacation, boys. Okay, this is my question. Why do you guys why are we talking about Gary Vee? Like, did he do something nutty? Why are we talking about him?
Well, Pipe, explain this to Ron. He's kind of always doing something nutty, and I feel like Gary Vee is the sort of business thought leader, like entrepreneur that Donald Miller wants to be. So you think Donald Miller is on this kind of like Christian Gary Vee, quote-unquote Christian Gary Vee trajectory?
Kind of, except like Donald Miller has his thing. Like, he does branding. So his whole thing is helping companies like tell their story, and they have this very tightly crafted way of doing it.
Yeah.
Gary Vee is sort of like he is a successful entrepreneur, no question. Like, he's done successful business things. He's made money. So in that sense, he gets credit. He's not just a, you know, self-proclaimed expert at stuff. But he's just sort of this outsized personality who has kind of no brakes on his mouth. He thrives on profanity. That's not a judgment statement. That's just count the F-bombs, which I think is part of the reason why the young Christian entrepreneurs like him, because there's sort of an edginess. And he's
a little dangerous.
He's essentially like – he's a little Driscoll-y, except he's not pretending to be, you know – representing Jesus. He's just representing commerce. And so, again, he gets credit for not being fake in that way. But yeah, he's just a he's sort of the next round of like leadership entrepreneur guys after, you know, there was John Maxwell and there was Seth Godin. So Maxwell was sort of like the baby boomer version. Godin was sort of the like Zen Yoda-ish guy.
And Godin was the tribes guy, right? Like, find your tribe, that whole deal.
Tribes, Purple Cow, mm-hmm. All Marketers Are Liars, etc. He wrote a whole bunch of stuff. None of his books were any good.
No.
Or they were fine. They just should have been a blog post, which is where they started anyway.
He would fit in well with Christian publishing.
Right. Though. Well, who's imitating who here?
Exactly.
And then Gary's sort of the next generation, which is like it's authentic, it's real, it's genuine. We're not going to polish and spit shine anything. It's all going to be very sort of aggressive and in your face. And it fits with sort of the rise of leadership books that are like The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F and all of these books like that that are they sort of just, you know, there's one called The No A-Holes Rule. There's, you know, they're sort of like publishing has now adopted this like, yeah, we're just going to slap sort of crudity or crassness on the cover of a book and roll with it.
Is it almost like we're actually just embracing what it really is, which is take no prisoners, get exactly where you want to go, you know, kind of, you know, create your own destiny, and just who cares who's a trail of dead behind you as you're doing it?
It's kind of like that, except he's not a mean person in terms of like. So one of the guys we're going to get to shortly is a decidedly mean person who literally wanted to leave a trail of dead bodies in his wake.
That may be the best thing you've ever said on the program.
Gary Vee is more just like, yeah, it's a take control of your own destiny, do your own thing, you know, but he's not trying to get people to freight train others. It's just he just has this personality that's kind of aggressive, pointed, like, man, this is who I am. And I think that's why people like him, because nobody wants to have enough self-control to know, oh, I shouldn't say that around these people. I should couch this in a certain way. I should have some self-control.
He's just unapologetic is what it sounds
like. Super unapologetic.
Yeah. Yep.
But he's a massive hit in the secular business world, obviously, but also in like the Christian business world or the Christian entrepreneurs. And they look to him and they're like, oh, he's my guy.
Pipe, don't you think it's a little like there's a little like shred of just motivation in it too, where like these young Christian businessmen, like they probably never had a JV football coach at a public school who swore at them all the time. So like they kind of like, you know, waking up in the morning and hopping on Twitter and having Gary V like smack them around a little bit. Don't you think there's a little element of that to it?
I think so. And I mean, I think there's that. He resonates for the same reason that Driscoll did, because sure. there's a whole swath of sort of aggressive, testosterone-full young men mm-hmm. who want to be like have a fuse lit under them, and yeah. a guy who can get in your face and sort of shout at you or just sort of cut through the BS does that.
It's like kids growing up having to listen to Christian hip hop, and then when they're old enough, they can finally put on a Jay-Z record, and it's like their whole world expands.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's definitely part of it. And I think in the Christian world, because of the wreckage caused by the, you know, like the hyper aggressive masculine pastors, there's sort of been a move away from that, which I would say is like 90% good. But I also think we are at risk of not connecting effectively with guys who need to be had somebody shoot straight to them. And so Somebody like Gary Vee starts filling the void in some ways.
Dude, he's a Russian wine critic worth 160 mil, boys. That's he started incredible. Out as a wine critic.
Really?
That's what it says on his wiki.
Ron, give me a little more background, because I haven't cared enough to like really look into his background. But like, was he a wine critic that then started? Didn't he pipe start one of these like mail order wine companies, or am I thinking of a different guy?
Yeah, it says was first known as a wine critic his family had a wine business. And then he got into digital marketing and social media and just kind of went from there and just exploded. So, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm on his site. It's called empathywines.com. Don't worry, we're not getting paid for this. Two of us are employed by Baptist organizations. We can't have any knowledge of this. But, yes.
We hate this.
He has started this evil, debauched thing where you can get what is apparently good wine for affordable prices.
Well, I'm not Baptist, so I just signed up for the mailing list.
Exactly. Ronald will be he'll be enjoying Empathy Wines.
I'm part of
on his next retreat. Exactly. Yeah, just don't have it sent to your home. Have it sent directly to Naples, Florida. So Gary V, if you're listening, send that wine to the Sojourn Retreat Center in Naples, Florida.
So just looking through his website, his email list is called the Hustler's Digest, not to be confused with Hustler Magazine. That's something else. The Gary V content strategy is a key part of this, how to grow and distribute your brand's social media content. So that gives you a sense of kind of what he's about. He's got a podcast, I think. He just does all of the branding, marketing, build your business stuff.
But guys, don't you think that like the Christian market is ripe for a sort of a non-cussing sort of version of this guy to sort of write that book, kind of start those seminars, be a guy about his age that has that kind of personality.
So Michael,
that's not Dave Ramsey.
Michael Hyatt was the guy, but Michael Hyatt is more in the John Maxwell generation.
Michael Hyatt was kind of a joke too, just kind of a cheese bag.
Well,
you know,
I'll take joke for his bank account to some degree.
Totally.
Which, all of that to say, yes, Christians are ripe for it, because when you slap a Christian label, I mean, if Christians have proven anything, it's that when you slap a Christian label on stuff, we'll buy some garbage.
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, just that sort of like you get this Driscollian dude, right, that like comes in. And, you know, he's kind of has that machismo a little bit, kind of is a little raw, you know, kind of shoots straight, kind of gets under everybody's skin, but has all these sort of like brilliant, inspiring things that everybody wants to glom onto. I mean, it feels really ripe to me right now. You know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
I think Michael Hyatt was like the last generation's version of that. He was sort of the Willow Creek version of that.
Right.
And I think the new one, Piper. And maybe even Donnie Miller's a little bit.
But we need a guy with like cats that's just like.
That's
like
what I'm saying. Yeah, he's got to be a little hipster, you know, like a little aggro, like you said, Ron, but also a little hipster. I don't know.
I feel like most guys who have that bent have decided to plant churches instead of plant branding businesses until their churches fail, and then they go become consultants.
Dude, there you go. So we gotta get these guys to like fail their churches in a couple more years, and then they'll be ready.
Oh, just yeah, give it a minute. But I think so. John Acuff tried this to a, you know, so he was sort of Christian humor
dude,
guy.
Acuff, you're right,
he's
kind man.
Of a, but he's a goofball though, right? I mean, he doesn't
right. Like, he followed more like the humor, and honestly, like he is a very good natured person in terms of like he's not the aggressive edgy guy. He uses humor, but not. You know, he's not sort of a blunt, in-your-face, stop-being-an-idiot kind of guy.
Yeah, he's more of like the John, you know, what's his name? What's the comedian?
Christ?
Yeah. No, the other guy.
Maxwell?
Yeah.
Dude, I'm looking at Acuff right now, Piper. Just pictures. You know what he is? This is a little bit of a stretch.
Acuff is like the John Mulaney of this whole scene.
Mulaney, yes, that's a pretty good call.
I think he's the male version of, you know, the sort of affluent Nashville woman that's really like popping right now in terms of Christian publishing with the kind of long platinum blonde hair and the like, I'm so stressed, ha 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 ha, you know, but like look at how amazing my life is kind of thing.
Are you talking about Rachel Hollis, baby?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like that, dude.
Oh, but there's different layers of evangelicalism, because Rachel Hollis is the, you know, sort of pseudo spirituality, but you have those that are like Bible study leaders and a whole, I mean, that's like a whole genre of yeah, kind of that version of Christian of evangelical person. Women influencers
of Christian. Yeah. Nashville person.
To be fair, two thirds of them are from Texas. So Nashville has a good portion of that, but Texas owns the market.
That's very true, man. That's so true. I think you're right though, Ron. I think the market is like ready for that kind of
it's
Christian.
It's just weird that somebody hasn't like risen up, huh?
Somebody to like give you permission to make all your money and be a huge materialist, which as we've discussed is like kind of Dave Ramsey's thing, but
well, that's what I'm saying. He'd have to put like a twist on it, which is like, yeah. this is about stewardship, but it's also about like taking right. what's yours, but then it's about like giving it away, but then it's about keeping enough of it.
No, you know what I mean? So like, it can't be your money. Ramsey has the personal finance thing down where he's like, this is how you manage totally. Your money. And he has helped a billion people get out of debt. And there's also the rich people side of things. But then you have – this has to be like – this is the brand management. So this is how to build your platform and like get rich for the kingdom of God, or, you know, grow your business for the – like sort of the – you have to slap some mission on commerce.
Dude, right. You gotta like spiritualize the getting rich.
Yeah, you get it. You get it to give it away.
So we
like
need
build,
this guy.
Build your
like
brand to give it away.
Who's going
to
be this guy?
It's not even like, get it to a, give it away, Ron. That's a little too pastory and a little too like baby boomer.
That's a little too correct, Ron.
It's more like both and. It's you
well,
can
right,
get
I'm
rich
right,
and the products you're selling are good for other people.
Because
so
you don't
have to give anything away.
Because you already hear like sermons like that. No, man, we need to make as much money as we can because, you know what I mean? Like that's expanding the kingdom. So like there's so many different ways you can frame this.
Dude, but these business guys love hearing that because that gives them permission to like
to
make
be greedy.
As much money as they can and be greedy. So like
sanctified greed?
I think, yeah, sanctified greed. So this guy needs to be old enough to have sort of a little bit of gravitas. So I'm saying north of 35, but south of 50. All right. So like younger than Ramsey, you know, even Donald Miller's probably pushing 50. So younger than Donnie M. Yeah, a little bit of tats, a little bit of hipster.
How does probably the Christian persona thing work though? Because like authenticity equals profanity in this day and age. I think
you and I are the most authentic people there are, Piper.
I think Boomer has it. I don't think the guy can exist in the Christian market, the CBA. So my theory is that he needs to exist outside of it, but have this sort of thing about it where like, no, I heard he's a Christian. I heard he actually believes in Jesus. And then so that's something that sort of is a part of who he is. He doesn't deny the Lord. He kind of has this sort of spirituality that's close enough to the evangelistic community to make him kind of good with all of them. But then also he has permission to be a little bit raw. So everybody doesn't know what to do with him. He's kind of like riding.
Yeah.
He's kind of riding that tension. Right. So you're not really sure where he's at. Right.
Yeah. So kind of almost like a Chris Pratt, like, oh, I heard, you know,
exactly like the Chris. Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I dig it, man. I dig it. I think there's
Boy,
an opportunity.
I can't wait till this guy hits it big. He'll be my favorite.
Absolutely. No, we'll hate him. He'll be miserable and insufferable.
We'll hate him, but we'll be promoting his book.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And we'll do it with
gusto. And we'll do it as long as Evander Holyfield endorses, I'm in.
All right. Boys, speaking of celebrities with big egos who have had rough years, James McDonald. And like, boy, where do we even start talking about this in a way that will like ensure that he doesn't want to have us killed as well? But I'm just going to read some headlines. Megachurch founder James McDonald allegedly sought murder for hire. Allegations: Pastor James McDonald took steps to hire a hitman. That's from Pathos. He took steps. You know, he was walking down that road, allegedly. So this is a guy that, you know, that kind of gets talked about all the time, and now has become sort of the archetype for like what happens when your megachurch empire gets out of control, and maybe your ego gets out of control, and all this stuff. But
maybe your ego gets out of control.
Maybe, yeah, this is me hedging a bit. What do we make of this? I mean, I'm going to ask Ron first, just because they're both pastors, but I feel like that's like saying Michael Jordan and I are both basketball players because we've both shot a basketball. I feel like that's where the comparisons stop. But Big R, what do you make of this? How does someone like get to this point?
Dude, I just clicked on his website. It says website under maintenance.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, persona under maintenance.
Well, dude, I love the link that everybody's posting on social about the whole murder thing. And he's like, the picture they show of him is like him at some like Harley Davidson rally wearing like his leather jacket.
Dude, I'm literally looking at that picture right now.
Of course, it's that picture.
Yeah, the big white goatee, the bald head, the
right.
Dude, what is it about like? I'll say pastors, but that's probably not fair. Like the wannabe tough guy thing. Like, hey, I'm a tough guy. I got a Harley. I got my leather jacket. Like, what's going on with that?
Dude, I don't know, man. I don't even know that. I mean, that's complex. Other than saying, like, it's weird to think that a guy like that aggressive. I mean, again, it goes back to Driscoll a little bit, but like a guy that's like that rough around the edges, that aggressive, has that bad of a reputation, but built a church and a radio ministry that large. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
It's wild. Isn't
like
it?
Well, at some point, somebody blows a whistle, right? But it's almost like, well, dude, like this could have happened like 10 years. Like, did how far back do these murder allocations go, right? I mean, yeah. When did you start threatening murder? Was this like 20 years ago? I mean, on one hand, I mean, you could say that Jimmy Mack is just doing what we've all felt like doing.
Yeah,
and, he actually like made that phone call and said, so this guy's driving me up the wall. Is there a way to knock him off? I mean, we've all thought that, but like,
dude, right.
We never make that call. So at some point, Jimmy Mack has so much power that he's thinking, hold on, I'm not only going to make the call, but I'm going to find a way that this could be possible. And like, it won't ever come back to me, but this guy will be actually dead.
Dude, right? It's wild, which is why, like, and I think I speak for all three of us when I make this statement. So There is one level for us of like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. Like, let's talk about it in a semi funny way. But honestly, when Piper sent that link, like there was real sadness. Like there was a sense of, oh my gosh, that's just dark. You know, it's so dark and it's so like, and this is the part that I think is sort of cautionary for me at least, and maybe for you guys. And Pipe, I want to hear you on this. Like, to me, it just looks like what happens when somebody goes so like all in down the road of ego and influence and power, such that you begin to get this skewed sort of Godfather, Boardwalk Empire, Sopranos kind of view of yourself, where this not only seems normal, it seems like a good idea. And I don't know, I guess we're all capable of that. We're all capable of being that self-deluded. Pipe, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, when I sent the link, I certainly wasn't sending it with like, hey, let's yuck it up about this. I suppose there are jokes to be made, but at the same time, because of the context of the, you know, a church collapsing, it kind of steals all the humor out of it. It seems to me that what sets a pastor who gets to this position apart from like, say, a crime boss, you know, organized crime, you know, watch The Godfather, whatever, where people just sort of like or Boardwalk Empire, whatever, is that the ability to hold spiritual authority over somebody's head is even heavier than the ability to hold like money over their head. So most megachurch pastors who get to this position don't have anybody who can speak bluntly into their lives who's not on their payroll. And if you are on the payroll, you don't speak bluntly because it could cost you your job. You don't tell your boss you're being an idiot. That's a bad idea, generally speaking. But when money's the only thing stopping you, there does come a tipping point where either somebody offers you more money to tell the truth or you're like, it's just not worth it anymore. When somebody's holding spiritual authority over your head, you know, and that was the culture there at Harvest was, you know, like you are being divisive if you go against the church leadership. You are hurting God's church. Mm. And I've been at other churches like that as well. That's a whole different level of insidious because you're essentially saying you're a bad Christian for trying to do a thing that looks very like that is right. You are trying to do a thing that is godly, and for doing so, you are a bad Christian.
Yeah, that's there's a cost for that.
That's the confusion that these guys sow and hold over people's heads. The other piece is they're so removed from the vast majority. My guess is, you know, I don't know how many people went to Harvest, 10,000, 15,000. My guess is 80, 90% of those people had no idea what kind of a person
for sure
James McDonald was. They only, maybe that might be generous. Might be more like 95%. They only knew what they saw on Sundays. And then if they had a really good small group or a really good Sunday school teacher or a really good church community in – because, you know, in a church of 10,000 people, everything is segmented. You have your little community within the larger church. And if that was healthy, which I think a lot of them were, there's no reason for them to be aware of his character issues. Now, if you have a sensitive, you know, reflex to these things, you can probably pick up on stuff from the preaching and the way that he communicated and stuff like that. But the vast majority of people just had no idea.
Well, people become loyal to their pastor too. So when somebody gets into that sort of area of celebrity and fame, they start getting hits, and people are aware that, you know, when you're at the top of a particular game, you're just going to receive more hits, and then you have a congregation of 15,000
people. I'm
not sure
hit is the word we should use in this case.
But they're going to be loyal to him. So they're going to say, oh, you just don't like him because he's, you know, he has a wide audience now and he has influence and power. But I think going off of what Pipe said though, Big T, is I think what's so dangerous about these kind of you know, these scenarios of churches that have just exploded to that degree is you do sort of assume this kind of absolute power. I mean, what Pipe is saying is totally true. You attain this kind of absolute power to where you, I mean, and imagine that kind of power in the context of a church scenario where everybody's trying to think the best of you. Everybody's trying to believe the best of you. Everybody gives you the benefit of the doubt. So things don't even come down to a leader like that from a board in the way that they would in the marketplace, right? Because you don't really have that level of accountability. Because again, you're a man of God, you're a man of the cloth. Certainly, like, there's a humility. Certainly you're a man that prays. Certainly you're aware of your shortcomings. Certainly things don't look the way that they're being perceived. And so there's a way to talk around all of those things and to give everybody second, third, and 290th chances. Because again, that level of absolute power has gotten to the place where there's blind spots like everywhere. It just creates like additional blind spots everywhere. So I think it's one of the most like dangerous places you can be within the context of church leadership. Because again, nobody wants to see you fall, really, you know, in a lot of ways. I don't know.
Yeah, boys, it's wild. I don't know. I hope there's a redemptive ending in this somehow. And I mean, obviously we all believe in the gospel. And we believe that, you know, a person has the potential to sort of repent and be redeemed right up until the very end. So, hopefully there's hopefulness and redemption in this story somewhere. Boys, I want to end with a kind of a lighter hearted one. And I want to get your opinion on someone who tends to be very divisive in the film world. That someone is Quentin Tarantino. I'm a big Quentin Tarantino fan. He has a new movie coming out that I'm very excited about called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It stars some incredible people, Brad Pitt, Leo DiCaprio, huge cast. Looks pretty good. I'm excited to see it. I want to get your opinions on Tarantino because people tend to either love him or hate him. Big R, what are your thoughts on this movie and this filmmaker?
It's so funny you say that, Big T, because I just saw a trailer for it. It looks kind of different to me for a Tarantino film. You know what I mean? And kind of putting Brad Pitt in sort of that more that co-star kind of place behind DiCaprio, I thought was interesting because that's kind of how it looks in the trailer. And I don't know. I mean, Tarantino does. Oh, you know, Tarantino can't be anything but Tarantino. So, you know, I feel like the trailer tells half the story.
Yeah.
And I forget what his last movie was, but I felt like the last movie he did, it felt like he was kind of treading water a little bit. This feels like he has like a renewed freshness towards being like the Tarantino that everybody is hoping for.
Dude, I agree. I didn't like his last movie. His last one, I think, was Hateful Eight. Yeah.
Yeah, and that thing kind of got buried. It didn't get great reviews, and I don't think it was a smash in terms of.
And it actually wasn't that good compared to the previous two. So Inglourious Basterds, I loved. Django Unchained, I loved.
And this kind of just felt like a conglomeration of those two kind of mashed together, even though I know it was a different movie. But I don't know. It just felt like he was treading like similar water from the previous two movies he had done. And this one seems like he's stepping outside of that now. And it's kind of taking place in the 70s, which is kind of a good decade for Tarantino. You know what
I mean?
It's
a great decade just visually. And I kind of dig the idea of Tarantino kind of doing Hollywood satire. You know,
exactly.
I feel like all the mega directors at one time or another will dip their toe into the Hollywood satire, like industry satire waters.
And, but I love,
I'm interested.
No, that's a good point. But you know what I love, man? I love that he's casting DiCaprio into sort of this role. It's almost like DiCaprio's Jerry Maguire role, where he's like this guy that's just, he's getting old and he's down on his luck.
Yeah, I think that, man.
That's not something we've seen DiCaprio like do a lot. You know what I mean?
It's kind of a vulnerable moment for both of those alphas. You know,
it is, because DiCaprio is getting to do his like mid to late 40s now, age wise. So he's going to have to play more of those kind of roles anyway. And so it's cool that he's like casting him in that kind of a role. And then again, Brad Pitt sort of being that co-star, I thought was super interesting.
Yeah, no, I agree. So Pipe, did you have this experience in college in the 90s or the early 2000s where I feel like you had to pretend to like Quentin Tarantino in order to be thought of as cool by a certain kind of person?
Oh, absolutely. The guy lived in the dorm room next door to me my freshman year in college, and he came in day one of college. He's like, oh no, I'm here. You know, I'm an art major, and then I'm going to go to Hollywood and make movies.
What did that guy actually end up doing without naming his name? Do you remember? Like,
No idea. We didn't stay friends. We weren't like enemies. It's just we went different paths.
He's probably like a pharmacist or like managing a hedge fund for his dad.
His name is John Acuff.
Exactly. If listeners of this podcast, if I list the three things that he used as a litmus test for other people, you will know why we didn't get along. And they were Requiem for a Dream, Radiohead, and Pulp Fiction.
Dude, that kind of college guy was so insufferable.
It's lowest common art denominator is what I would call that.
That's the worst kind of guy though, because he's clearly like swinging his like artistry around in a way that's supposed to like intimidate you or make you feel
What do we call that? An art measuring contest?
It's an art measuring contest. Man, Piper's on fire today, Ron. Pipe's throwing. He's throwing like 98 miles.
It's Pipe's app today. Let's just.
It is. It's Pipe's app. You and I are just along for the ride, and that's good.
Which is commentary. Yeah, so lowest like art common denominator for sure.
Yeah, Pipe. Do you like Tarantino? Did you pretend to like him or actually like him when?
I never pretended to like Pulp Fiction. I hate Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction
is just a garbage movie. So
I agree.
I don't know that anybody can like Tarantino because he is so uneven. Mm-hmm. Some of his movies are really, really good. So the two that, you know, I love Django Unchained, for example. Yeah. Kill Bill, the Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2, I really enjoyed those back in the day. Yep. I really did not enjoy, Hateful Eight was just kind of fine. I enjoyed it because of the charisma of the cast, but it was kind of a flat movie. I didn't like Reservoir Dogs. So there's just kind of all
over
the place.
Yeah, I liked that one.
You did?
Yeah, I did, man. But to be fair, though, I liked it in the 90s, and maybe I wouldn't like it if I saw it now.
Feels a little bit like a period piece to me. Like it was very sort of generation specific, and I think I might have missed it. And So yeah, there are some Tarantino movies where I'm like, oh, this is him at his absolute best. And then there are some that are like, what is happening here? Why are we doing this? And that's why I said, you need to sell me on this. What was it? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Is that the name of it?
Yeah.
Cause I really want to like it. I love Brad Pitt.
Yeah. Same.
I wish Brad Pitt was just the lead.
Yeah.
Because I think he's a better actor and a more compelling actor than Leonardo DiCaprio. I feel like DiCaprio has reached the Tom Hanks stage in his career where he just shows up and is himself.
Interesting. Yeah, he may have. And really, this movie may be the litmus test as to whether or not that's happened for him. And I agree, Pipe. I'm more of a Brad Pitt enthusiast than a DiCaprio enthusiast for sure. But it will be interesting to see the two of them on screen together. And that alone, to me, is almost enough of a reason to go see it. The fact that it has Brad in it, I see all of Brad's movies. So I was going to see this one, whether it was Tarantino or not. But yeah, man, I'm kind of stoked about it. And
what are your thoughts about Margot Robbie as an actress? Because she's now sort of like a Tarantino favorite. You know, he gets his favorites. He has these,
Know,
for eras specifically. You know, Samuel Jackson shows up in a ton of his movies. What's the guy's name? Timothy?
Oliphant?
Nope. Not him. British guy. He was in Reservoir Dogs.
I can picture him.
Funny Teeth. Yeah. But I said British guy, so that might be redundant. And, you know, so Leo's become one of these guys, I think, to a degree.
Kurt Russell, I think, is in. Isn't
he's
Kurt
in this
Russell?
One. Russell's not in a ton of his other ones. Oh, I guess he was in Hateful Eight. Yeah. But Margot Robbie's now seems like sort of a go-to for him. I don't get it. Is she a compellingly good actress?
Dude, I'm not sure. I haven't seen her in a lot of stuff.
This is brushing over the fact that she's an attractive woman that you can put in a movie, but like Hollywood is full of those, so why her as opposed to
anybody
else?
I don't know. I was gonna beg that question, actually.
I mean, why not, though?
I did see her in something that I liked. She starred alongside Tina Fey in this kind of obscure Tina Fey movie called Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Have you seen it, Pipe?
I haven't. I've heard of it, but I haven't watched it.
Dude, it's actually really good. It's about like war journalists in the Middle East, and it has the two of them in it.
Was it Tina trying to make a serious movie that literally sold $20 at the box office? I think.
Dude, yeah, it definitely did $20 at the box office, and I don't even know how I ran across it. But I like Tina Fey. Like, I'm a huge Tina Fey fan, and I'll watch almost anything with her in it. It was kind of half serious, half comedic. I liked it. Like, to me, it hit that kind of genre space where it was a really good dramatic story with some comedic moments in it, which is a thing that I tend to really like. Like when I'm with the boys and KK's gone, like I'll go deep dive. I'll go face first into like the really stupid Will Ferrell comedies or whatever. But in general, like when I'm watching movies as a grown up, I don't tend to go like super deep dive into those, but yeah, she was good in that. But yeah, Pipe, I'm not sure why the Tarantino obsession, other than, you know, maybe she's super hot and he wants to like dirtbag it up with her. He likes to use people that
like other people would question. I mean, that's kind of a Tarantino thing.
That's true.
Because he takes risks, and I think the one thing we can agree about with Tarantino is that he can make, you know, he has the freedom to make movies that we are going to be able to say, man, I don't understand it. I thought it was horrible, but I absolutely love this other movie. And so he has that, like, he kind of has that unique place in Hollywood to where if he makes a movie that's not as great and doesn't sell as well, it doesn't really hurt him at all.
Yeah. Also, he's one of the few directors that, like, you can very much draw a straight line between his movies and all of the sort of knockoff movies that have tried to be Quentin Tarantino. There was one, and I'll be interested to see if you guys have seen this. Did you guys see the Bad Night at the El Royale?
No.
Came out recently, big ensemble.
Very Tarantino though, huh?
Dude, very, very Tarantino.
Well, it was Tarantino right up until you saw Chris Hemsworth walk on screen and you're like, oh, nope, that's not somebody who Tarantino would ever cast.
Dude, that's true. And I love Hemsworth, but he was kind of Hemsworth was the Achilles heel of that movie. Like, he was really weak in it. His character just didn't work for me. But in every other way, that movie looked like just a straight up Tarantino kind of ripoff, and it was good. It was a super fun movie.
Yeah, there's even like his cinematic style has even influenced. So what is it called? American Gods. It's a Neil Gaiman book or series of books that has been turned into a TV series, but the way that it's shot and the just all of the cinematography looks like a straight up Tarantino ripoff.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Well, boys, we've probably exhausted these topics. I know that was a little abrupt, but I feel like there are people that have to get off the radio at 11 o'clock, and I don't want to push anybody's limits. And Ron's got the last few blissful days of vacation to get back to, so we will let him do that. Boys, we have done what we always do on this program. We have wandered to and fro throughout these topics, and until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Hey there, it's Nicole Eunice from the How to Study the Bible podcast, and I'd love to invite you to join us as we weekly discover a passage of God's Word together. From beginning to end, from principles to practicals, we are here to make sure that God's Word is powerful and relevant to your life. If that sounds like something you're looking for, I would love to invite you to subscribe. You can go to lifeaudio.com and search How to Study the Bible, and we'll see you there.